So how are your Christmas preparations coming along? Today is the 13th of December, and that means if you've got a calendar handy, you have just 12 short days left to get everything ready for your coming celebrations. Just 12 days. Maybe you've just woken up to the fact that Christmas is around the corner, and suddenly you've realized all the things that you've left to the last minute. But 12 days it is. We can't do anything about that. Sorry if that's a bit of a shock. But 12 days until Christmas arrives. Now, for some here, you're thinking, that's no problem at all. Plenty of time. After all, the shops are still open on Christmas Eve. No point rushing or panicking. I mean, sure, no one else has had the same idea of going to get their Christmas presents on Christmas Eve. It'll be wonderfully quiet, easy to get around, loads of time left to prepare for Christmas. Well, if that is you, good luck to you. I hope that all goes well. But I guess for most of us, our preparations for Christmas began some time ago. Maybe you got ahead of the game, bought your Christmas cards, and even written them already in good time in case there are any problems with the mail. If you haven't done that, don't worry. You've got until Saturday for second-class stamps to wing their way to people by Christmas. Maybe you've been very organized. The turkey was ordered a few weeks ago. And maybe it was months ago that you phoned around the family, coordinated diaries, to work out when everyone could get together and celebrate Christmas together. Christmas involves a great deal of planning and preparation, doesn't it? Christmas is about excitement and anticipation as much as it is enjoying the day itself. Christmas isn't just about the 25th of December, is it? It is about the build-up to it, and it is about the anticipation as the celebrations draw ever closer. And you know what? The same was true of the first Christmas as well. We're going to take a few moments to consider some words from one of our Bible readings, from Luke's Gospel, Luke's account of Jesus' life. If you want to turn to it, you're welcome to do so. It's on page 1027 in the Bibles that are scattered around. And it is some words that are spoken by a man called Zechariah at the end of Luke's first chapter of his Gospel. And although this is a Christmas reading, it is in some ways a surprising Christmas reading, because these are words that are spoken about 6 months before Jesus' birth. So I guess this is, in our minds, about the 25th of June. But if you can sort of imagine yourself in the warmth of 25th of June instead of near to the 25th of December, here are our words spoken by this man, Zechariah, and important words because they speak of a promised gift. Now, if Christmas is this time full of expectation and anticipation, if you're going to try and think of a time that it was at least as full, if not fuller, of those kind of things, of that anticipation, well, there's no better time for that kind of thing than when you're expecting a baby. You have those 9 months of waiting, and then the big day arrives. And when the baby finally arrives, well, then you would expect those new parents who have just had this wonderful new arrival to not stop talking about it. And my guess is most of us have experienced that. The wife of one of my colleagues here at All Souls has had a baby just this week. And if you saw her husband, Rico, here this evening, you would expect him to be gushing about the wonder of his new baby daughter. She arrived on Monday. Her name is Mercy Catherine Rose, and she weighed 7 pounds and 1 ounce. And that's the kind of information you'd expect from a new father or a new parent, to be able to tell you everything about them. And in fact, if you caught him at the door, you would hear him, I'm sure, retell the story of the birth. Whether you liked it or not, whether you were put off by the gory details of that kind of thing, he would tell you nonetheless. And I'm sure there would be plenty of pictures to queue over. Hopefully not pictures of the birth. But once everything's got cleaned up and tidied up a little bit more, pictures of this new child, I'm sure he would reach in and there would be the smartphone or the photo album, and there would be all the pictures of this new child. What you wouldn't expect, what would surprise you, is if you went up to him and you would find that his continual focus was in fact on someone else's baby. Well, that would surprise us, wouldn't it? For a set of new parents, if you go up to them and you find that they push away any inquiries about their own child, and all they want to do is to talk about someone else's child. Well, that might be surprising to find, but it is exactly what we find in these words from this man, Zechariah. You see, Zechariah is a new father, but his parenthood has come about in a very peculiar way. He is a first-time father, but in fact, he's older than Keith Richards. Another surprise is that he spends the whole pregnancy unable to speak. Some pregnant women may find that a wonderful thing for the expectant father, but it's certainly true of Zechariah. And when he is able to speak, when the baby arrives and he is able to speak again, he gives an unexpected name, John. Well, it's probably up the top of the baby name lists for us, but it would have been very surprising in Zechariah's day and in Zechariah's family. And if you've never ever read the first chapter of Luke's account of Jesus' life, if you've never read the story of this man, Zechariah, it's well worth a read. Why not take some time to do that this Christmas? But as we hear from Zechariah, we find he is actually a normal parent. He is excited about the birth of his son. But he's also excited because of what his son, John, who would later be called John the Baptist, would do. Because his role would be to point people to another man, one born 6 months later, the person of Jesus. And you see, one of the reasons why this is so significant for Zechariah is because God is keeping his promises. The words that Zechariah speaks as he perhaps holds the infant John in his hands, the words that he speaks are full of references back to the Old Testament, back to the whole storyline of the Bible, back to what God has said and done in the past and the promises he has made. And Zechariah knows, and Zechariah is excited about the fact that in sending Jesus on that first Christmas, God is keeping his promises. And that means for us, Christmas isn't a chance event or a happy accident. It's not some kind of new plan that God had come up with to surprise everyone or a sudden change of mind on his part. No, Christmas is part of God's plans and purposes from ages past and long ago. It is what he set out to do all along. God is keeping, and as Zechariah puts it, he is remembering his promises. Now we know, don't we, Christmas is full of things for us to remember. It's all part of the preparations for the celebration. I need to remember to buy enough food for those who are coming for Christmas dinner. I need to remember to put the turkey in the oven at the right time and at the right temperature, and remember how my oven works to make sure it switches on at the right time. I need to remember all those hints that my wife has dropped months ago about what present she would really like. And I need to remember to buy the right presents for the right people and get them just right. And at Christmas, God remembers and keeps his promise. His promise is to send a gift. But not just any gift, the right gift. Not only a promised gift, but the perfect gift. Well, let's be honest here for a moment. As we think about all of the things and preparations for Christmas, we have to realize that Christmas sometimes can be disappointing, can't it? I mean, after all the excitement and anticipation, the reality very rarely meets our expectations. And if that's true of Christmas generally, well, it's certainly true occasionally of Christmas presents. From the anticlimactic gifts in a Christmas cracker, and why on earth you'd want to keep any of those things that fly out when you pull the cracker, to the frankly atrocious sweaters that great Aunt Sylvia knits you every year, despite the hints that you drop again and again, Christmas gifts can end up being rather a disappointment. Oh, you see them under the Christmas tree and the wrapping means that anything could be in there, and you dream up what it could be until the day arrives and you rip open the wrapping and you find, yes, it's socks again. Gifts can be disappointing, and it's perhaps tempting to think of that when it comes to the first Christmas. You see, Zechariah's words at the end of this first chapter of John tell of a promised gift that God would send, a gift that speaks of defeat of enemies, of decisive peace, of political power and military might. And what we get is a baby in a manger, a tiny, vulnerable little child lying in an animal's feeding trough to a working-class family in a poor part of town. And as we look at it that way, God's gift at Christmas might seem disappointing. It might seem rather a letdown. It might seem not the gift that we wanted, nor the gift that we think we really need. But in fact, as we look at the Christmas story, we find that the gift that God gives is the perfect gift that we really need. And to see that, we only need to look at the gift tag. You see, Zechariah's words tell us who this gift is for. Right at the end of these words that he speaks, he says that this is a gift for those living in darkness and in the shadow of death. And it doesn't take much for us to see that those words describe our world today. We could easily feel that we are living in darkness, can't we? From the threat of global terrorism to the specter of climate change to poverty and powerlessness on our own doorsteps. Darkness, it seems, is all around us, and darkness, it seems, is within us too. For in our most self-aware moments, we realize there is much within our own lives and our own hearts that we are not happy with, that we are not proud of, where darkness creeps in there too. And for all of this, it's not surprising that at this time of year, we do our best to fill our homes and to fill our streets with light. From a string of bulbs on a Christmas tree to the wonderfully artistically arranged set of candles to the glow of Regent Street and Oxford Street drawing us in to spend, we surround ourselves with lights. One of the people who regularly wins the accolade of doing the best at this is someone called Paul Toole. He decorates his house and the garden around it every year using over 40,000 lights to decorate. And just looking at that picture, I can imagine his neighbors need to wear sunglasses through the month of December. He's apparently taking a break this year, which makes a lot of sense just from the electricity bills. I would imagine you'd want a bit of a break. But why do we do this? Why does someone like Paul Toole go that far? Why do we tack lights onto the outside of our houses and fill our inside of our houses with as much light as possible? What do we do? Why do we do it? Do it in an effort to dispel the darkness, to push it back and to keep it out. And while we can do that for the darkness of a winter's night, we can't do that for the darkness in our world or the darkness in our hearts. And Zechariah points us to the biggest darkness we can face. To those living in darkness, he says, and in the shadow of death. And maybe you are feeling that acutely this Christmas time. For many, Christmas isn't actually much of a celebration. It is actually a time of deep sadness as you're aware of loved ones who are no longer with us and the pain of being separated from them. I personally have been confronted with a desperately sad situation with a family that I know just this week, and I have felt again the pain of walking in the shadow of death. And however much we try, twinkly lights and tinsel won't dispel that darkness. Human effort and ingenuity won't remove the shadow of death from our world, however hard we try and however hard we would like it to. We need something better. And so God himself steps down into our world in the person of Jesus. And he does so to flood our dark world with light. He comes to dispel the darkness and to shine on the shadow of death. For you see, the babe in the manger became the man who said of himself, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Because you see, he is also the man who walks to the cross, who takes on all of our darkness, all of our wrongdoing, all of the blackness that we find in the hidden recesses of our heart, who takes our place so that we might find mercy and forgiveness. And he's not only the man who walks to the cross, he is the man who walks out of the tomb, risen to new life on the third day and removing the shadow of death, defeating the enemy of death once and for all. Jesus comes into our dark world as light and life. As Zechariah puts it, he is like the rising sun at the end of a moonless night. If you've ever been in the utter blackness of a night where there are no lights around, you can't see anything in front of your face, and then the sun rises, as the sun begins to peek over the horizon, the light floods in and the darkness has nowhere to hide. He comes, and the darkness flees from his presence. He comes to give light and to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death. He comes as the rising sun to shine on us. So let me ask you, in your preparations for Christmas, will you allow this light to shine into your life? Amid all the presents and the parties, the turkey and the tinsel, will you take time to consider this gift that God has given? Consider the light that has come into the world, that this is both the promise and the perfect gift that you never knew you needed, but is just what God has given. Why not take some time this Christmas to look again at the Christmas story? Maybe you've never ever read it as an adult. You may be familiar with the story. You've heard it at Christmas carol concerts and so forth in the past. But as an adult, you've never looked in again to what the Christmas story is about. Why this Jesus who comes as the light of the world is so wonderful and good news. Well, to help you, we've given you a little booklet that has the Christmas story in it. We'd love you to take that away and read it. But also, we've given you a number of questions, just to help you think about why this is important, why it's significant. If you've come with a friend, why not ask them, would you mind just looking at this together? It'd be great to think about what Christmas is about. You might find they'd be really excited to do that with you. But whether you do it with a friend, whether you do it on Christmas Day morning, whether you do it at any point, why not take that time to stop and to think about the gift that God has given? That it is both a promise gift, but it is a perfect gift because it is the gift of light to those living in darkness. I hope understanding that great gift that God has given will be part of your preparations this Christmas. And I hope that your celebrations will be full of light and full of the light of Christ.